Jay.
How's it going?
We're good, thank you. Sorry for keeping you waiting.
Oh God, it's fine. I'll sit you on TikTok having a good time. Don't worry about it.
Everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Somewhere in Between, the Early Careers GP podcast brought to you by the RCGP. My name's Mira, and I am joined by my two lovely co-hosts today, LJ and Kim. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
And today we've got a really good episode for you. You'll be listening to the dulcet tones of our other lovely co-host, Hatim, who went and had a chat with a GP trainee, Mohammed, a little bit about his experiences of doing an out-of-programme experience in medical education and what that means in terms of what you do when you're training, what are the opportunities that are out there, and his top tricks on what to do if you have an interest in something else. So let's sit back, have a quick listen, and then we shall come back and have a chat about it. Does that sound good, guys?
Sounds perfect to me.
Good to me.
Hey, I'm having a chat to Dr. Mohammed Salik Saeed. I'm really excited to speak to you. Both of us have had really interesting journeys in our training, so we thought we'd have a conversation around taking time out of program to do different things to diversify yourself and build your portfolio. So to start with, lovely to meet you, Mohammed. Do you want to give yourself give an introduction to our listeners?
Yeah, hi there, guys. So my name's Mohammed Salik Saeed. I'm currently an UP sort of trainee, so taking a year out of my general practice training. I completed my GP ST1 in Bromley last year and currently doing an UP in medical education. So that involves doing 3 days a week in King's College Hospital, Denmark Hill, but also doing 2 days a week at Health Education England, working with regional training days.
That's really an interesting role to be doing. How did you go about finding the role and actually thinking, oh, I need to take some time out of training to do all of this?
Yeah, so I think medical education is something I've been really interested in since I actually started in foundation training. It's something which I've been involved in, both from undergrad trainees, but also thinking about supporting all types of sort of colleagues and juniors. So I think in terms of sort of progressing my interest, I think that was really during my GP ST1. I had the opportunity to do an integrated training sort of job in Bromley called Bromley Healthcare Practice, which essentially involved me working with the local area, Bromley GP Alliance, it's called actually. And Bromley GP Alliance is a federation, it's an umbrella organization that supports GPs and GP trainees, both from an education perspective, but also from a service perspective. And I think it was from there really where I got an opportunity to understand actually the impact education can have, both on trainees and further on in terms of general practice. So what I did after that was I spoke to my TPDs, I spoke to my clinical supervisor, my educational supervisor, and really discussed about what opportunities were available, what opportunities potentially were around. And I was really fortunate that my educational supervisor actually knew that there were a few jobs available at King's. And therefore, I had a chat with one of the medical education directors, TJ Lasoy at Denmark Hill. And he was really interested in trying to getting a GP trainee to come along, something which they hadn't had before, and therefore kind of went on from there. So I think it's a bit about, appreciating what your interests are when you start training, but also trying to speak to people, networking and discussing your interests with those around you and those that are willing to support you.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with that, Mohammed. And also just a little bit of noise in the background. Was that you supporting one of your juniors at home?
Yeah. So that's my little one. That's my 18-month-old, which is another reason why it's been actually really nice to have a bit of more flexible training this year in terms of following on my own interests away from clinical practice, which has been fantastic, too.
And have you found that, because we did a recent episode where we were sort of focusing around parents who are doing GP training. So that's obviously a big change. And you started your GP training with a 6-month-old. So, if I'm right, or actually maybe with no baby, and the baby came during your first year of GP training, which is even more interesting. So how did you find that?
Yeah, so my little one was actually born in July, just before I started GP training. So literally, it was from the get-go of general practice training, it was having a baby and trying to balance that family life with, work and wanting to try to pursue a career and wanting to try to kind of understand where I find myself within this profession as a general practitioner. But you know what, I think general practice is amazing because I think it's one of the specialties where family life is not only encouraged but it's embraced, and actually it's kind of part of what you do both in your work but what you come back to. So what I found the most amazing was the fact that the support from my TPDs, the support from my education supervisor, I was on a general practice role as my first job, so you know those first 6 months meant that there was a real feeling of actually, you know what, I'm getting a feel of how it's going to be to actually be a doctor but also having this family in the future. So it's been really good. It's been challenging at times, but it's been enjoyable.
I'm glad to hear. I love that. I love how you started it as such a pivotal time in your life, and I love that you've had the support that you feel was necessary. And you talked quite clearly about the support that you had from your training program directors. So tell me a bit more about that. How did you go about that process of navigating I want to take time out of training so early in your training program?
Yeah, so I think all these things about having honest and open discussions. Again, one of the things I was fortunate about, as I mentioned, was that I had this role in Bromley GP Alliance, which was a leadership and kind of management role involved in some education, both for sort of GPs thinking about quality of documentation, for trainees looking at how we can improve sort of elderly care. So there were a lot of really interesting roles and things that were going on. The role was actually 2 days a week in Bromley GP Alliance, 3 days a week in a general practice or a usual general practice in Bromley. So the role that was 2 days a week was actually with one of the TPDs, which was really nice. And what I was able to do during that role was to have honest discussions about what I was enjoying, what I was finding interesting, and actually taking those moments to say, well, how do I see myself in 3 to 5 years when I've actually got through my training? And where do I see my profession and my career going? So I think those are the simple conversations you need to be having quite early on. But then actually formalizing that in an honest, organized discussion or in an email is a really good way to say, look, these are the things which I'm really interested in. These are the things which I really want to be doing as a GP. This is how I want to facilitate that in between my training. And I think most TPDs are actually really impressed if you have that vision. I'm not too sure how it was for you, Hatem, in terms of that. But I think if you come to your trainers with a vision of what you want to do for general practice and what you want to be able to give back to the profession, then they'll be only more than willing to support you in that.
It's definitely an interesting point. And I like what you say about really building those relationships quite early on. So I'm going to then share a little bit of my story. So I was a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed ST1, also thinking about, you know, what else could I do and how else could I diversify my training journey? And I chose to apply for the National Medical Directors Fellowship. Now, actually, the first time I applied, I didn't do what you did. I didn't put that time in to really, share what I want to do with my training program directors or with my educational supervisor. So when I applied for this role and I sought approval initially, I got a response to say, actually, this is not appropriate to take time out of training as an ST1 or after ST1. It's better you do this after ST2. However, I didn't realize, in some way that actually I do need to provide some more information here and make it clear why this is important to me and what value this will have to me. And at that point, I formalized that in an email. I made it quite clear that this is something that was really important to me, an opportunity that I was really interested in. And in that case, then it went on and got approved. So I think it's important that you do some of that groundwork, but it's also important that you are able to really express yourself, be persistent if that's what you want to do, and make it very clear that actually it's going to benefit you overall as a doctor and as a GP, and it's going to benefit your career overall as a GP in the future, because all of the skills that you gain from any time out of training will usually be useful for you as an individual and as in a GP. And so that's really important. So I like how you approach that. So
just something to say, can I just add, I mean, I actually applied something which was actually a side reason why I was so interested in doing this podcast, is I actually applied for the National Medical Directors training program. And, you know, I was really, actually, that was one of the things that was most interesting to me. I had a really good friend, Rais Luna, who's actually a GP trainee now and was doing it last year. And actually, I was reflecting upon how amazing the program is, and hearing from you, it's actually done so many amazing things in terms of opening doors. But actually, it's something that I bring up in terms of, you know, failure. So actually, I wasn't successful in my application, which was really heartbreaking, because actually it was something which I really wanted to do. But actually, you know, what happens is, if you are really ambitious, like you said, in terms of wanting to pursue something, and you're really interested in trying to develop something that you're passionate about, then actually other doors open up. And I was really fortunate to get this sort of teaching fellow job, and also this HEE role, which at the time, about 12 months ago when I was applying, I thought, oh my gosh, I've missed out on such a fantastic opportunity. So I completely echo with what you say, that if you really want something, actually there's so many avenues available to try to develop that and get that.
I love that candidness, you know. I love that being able to reflect on something that was quite difficult, but being able to come out of it better. I just think that shows incredible resolve. So that's fantastic, and I think that's really important for anyone that's thinking about taking time out. And actually, something else that requires a lot of resolve is navigating the process for taking time out. So tell us a bit about that in terms of the applications and how you approach that.
Yeah, so I think applications vary. I think what you really want to be doing is, once you've identified something that you want to follow or a program that you're interested in, I think it's thinking about the application process. So really the best way to be doing that is speak to people who are either in the role itself, who have been in the role before, or potentially are kind of trying to get employees for the role. And I think that information is really key, because then you really know what your employers want. You really know what actually it takes to be in that role in terms of application process. But also, it's a great opportunity to identify if there's any documents, if there's any job descriptions, if there's any information out there. Once you've done that, it's really managing your time. And I think that's one of the key things with any application, is making sure that you know the timeline and you get your stuff done. So for my application, it was very much writing a personal statement, writing about why I wanted to get involved in medical education at King's, why that was important to me in terms of my career development, but also what skills I demonstrated during my training so far that would enable me to be able to be able to take on the role and also excel further to support King's. Along with that, I think really it's thinking about referees. So you do need to have someone who can support you in that, and having those discussions early. Again, as we talked about, building up those relationships of people who've seen those skills or are able to appreciate those skills. So one of the things which I did during my sort of GP part of the 6 months in general practice was actually to get the opportunity to teach medical students who were at the general practice. And that was a really good opportunity for me to demonstrate to my clinical supervisor that, look, I'm actually able to teach. This is something which I've demonstrated. I've got this skill. Are you able to write a reference in relation to this element of my teaching and my skills towards this UPI? And that's a really good way, because what you really want is, you want someone who is going to write a supportive statement that demonstrates and can say that actually, you know, Mohammed Salik has these skills. He's very good in this, that, and the other.
Yeah, so we talked about the supportive training program directors, but actually your educational supervisors are also really key in this process, and it's important to sort of inform them quite early on because they're the ones that are going to watch you grow over your period of training as well. So that sounds like a really valuable sort of engagement that you did. So how long did it take? How long did it take to get your approval and to get everything sorted? And did it require a lot of effort on your end in terms of managing, getting your contracts in place or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think time frame wise, I think December. So I started my training program in August. December, I sent a formal email along with having a couple of informal discussions back in November about wanting to pursue something outside of general practice training or in between training. And then I remember my applications and everything probably taking up to March, April time. So March, April time, I kind of had a confirmation that I got the role. Also had a confirmation that I had been rejected from other places. And then I was able to formally tell my TPDs, my education supervisor, my clinical supervisor that I had been accepted on the role and I'd like to take that year out. But those discussions, very importantly, started from December. And I think that, to be honest, for me is the biggest thing, because if you're someone listening to this and you think, well, I'd really like to take a year out of my general practice training, I'd really like to pursue something different, maybe something in AI, maybe something in education, but I'm really not too sure about it. Well, actually, the best thing you can do is speak to your TPDs. The best thing you can do is speak to your clinical education supervisors, because they may know things or know about avenues that you can express yourself, or may be able to encourage you towards something they've seen as a skill or interest that you've demonstrated. And therefore, having those discussions early, even as early as 4 months into your training program, can be a great way of demonstrating that actually not only are you committed to the training program itself, but you really are passionate about following those different interests.
Yeah, absolutely. And you obviously have two roles that you're doing during your time out. So at what point did you come across these roles and kind of... Because as you said, you applied for the National Medical Director Scheme, and actually that was probably what you were hoping to do for your time out initially. And then you were at a stage where you weren't sure if you had time out what you would be doing. So how did you go about that process in terms of finding roles, navigating that system? Because it's very different to a training program where you know you're going to be told where you're going to be in 6 months' time. So what was your approach towards that?
Yeah, so I think the National Medical Directors Training Programme, what I really want to do is get involved in health education in England. I think I've always been passionate about looking at education holistically, very much in the way we look at clinical practice as a general practitioner holistically. I was really interested and keen on thinking about, well, how does teaching happen from a curriculum perspective? How does it happen from a trainer-centred perspective? And how do we enable it to be provided to trainees? I was completely gutted when I missed out on that National Medical Directors Training Program, particularly for the HEE role or being involved in HEE. But you know what? The King's role was kind of applied through knowing people at the Postgraduate Education Centre. I'd worked at King's College Hospital Trust for 2 years as a foundation trainee, and also at their Bromley site. As a GPST1. And so they said, look, this job has come up on NHS jobs. It's something you might be interested in. Look into the role. And it was only after I got accepted for the role that TJ Lasoy, the medical director, sat me down and said, actually, there's an additional role for Health Education England. We thought you might be interested in it. Would you be keen on taking it on? Which I said, yes, of course, I'd be really happy to do that. So I think there's no magic wand in the sense that it's not that I kind of came up with this idea of wanting to do Health Education England, a role within King's. But I think it's, again, about being passionate and being honest about what you want out of the role. So I remember in my interview saying that, look, one of the things I'd be really interested in is not only thinking about King's, but where King's sits within the wider training programs for trainees, and either getting involved at a higher level, both from Health Education England. So it's fantastic that that was actually heard and then subsequently kind of offered to me as an additional role within the platform.
Yeah, that is a really, well, I guess this is, I think you make your opportunities. And I think if you put yourself out there and you apply to things and you make people know that this is something that you're interested in, then the opportunities will come your way. And that's clearly what's happened. So tell us about the year. What have you been up to and how has it been going so far?
Yeah, so it's a really dynamic year. And I think that's what I love about the role is that it's no day is same. And I think that's the beauty about general practice, if you want general practice to be like that. But also that's the beauty about roles like these. So there's four different aspects to the role which I'm doing, which I've touched upon already. In terms of the King's role, it's undergraduate teaching. So students from King's College Hospital or King's College London Medical School come along for teaching. Either that can be simulation or that can be sort of weekly teaching. That can be examination skills or practical skills. And that's really nice because it's a great opportunity to encourage students about what they're going to be learning, what they're going to be actually doing as doctors. And to be honest, that's something which we've all been associated with, either through medical school or as sort of foundation trainees, etc. The second part, which I think sometimes you get imposter syndrome, is actually teaching other trainees. So that's postgraduate training. And that can sometimes be quite overwhelming and quite scary, because actually you're doing simulation for people who potentially are more senior than you and or potentially are very experienced or have experiences in different specialties that you might not be doing. So that's been really interesting because we've done sort of simulation primarily for foundation trainees. Simulation is an amazing technique of learning. It's an amazing opportunity to actually reflect upon human factors, reflect upon the factors that relate to how we engage with one another, how we learn from one another, but also that opportunity for debrief. And I think debrief in particular is such a strong learning opportunity because it doesn't only bring in the learning experience that you have in front of you, but actually you tend to bring in experiences that you've had from previous clinical experiences. So we've had experiences where you know, students or trainees have talked about really difficult situations of patients being very unwell, patients dying, you know, the challenges they've had with COVID. So not only has it been beneficial from a learning perspective for your kind of AT assessment, but also kind of that opportunity to share those experiences that you've had within your training. And then we have Health Education England, which is 2 days a week that tends to involve sort of lots of meetings and discussions. So primarily discussing about regional training days. Regional training is provided across all specialties across London. What Health Education is really keen on doing is we're trying to standardize that teaching, understand what gold standard practice is, understand what can be done better, and try to provide a trainee-centered approach to Health Education England's support for regional training days. And then lastly, something which I've been really excited about this year too is personal development. And I think this is one of the biggest aspects for an UP is that you have time to develop your own areas of interest. So I've had the opportunity to do a PG cert in medical education, which is online at Cardiff University. I've also recently been accepted in the NHS Leadership Academy. So I'll be doing that alongside the rest of my 6 months over here and then another 6 months during general practice training. And then also had the opportunity to do more leadership management training within King's, more locally, trying to understand actually how the education department runs, and how we as education fellows are the future of that support.
You've been keeping yourself very busy. Let's compare that to your clinical role, where you know you have a set place to work, you go in and you have sort of set hours, a rota usually, you have patients waiting to be seen, and the role is very well defined and very much within your comfort zones, having gone through medical school and done your foundation training. All of a sudden, you just started this out-of-program experience in a completely different setting. Did you find that challenging initially, and it's particularly the way you work challenging? Because you know I did, but when I started my fellowship, it was very different, a completely different world to the way I was working previously. With a lot of people struggle with losing that sort of defined job role and defined program for the day, because often you actually make your day more flexible or it's formed by kind of whatever the priorities are or whatever opportunities are available or, you know, things like that. So yeah, how did you find that process?
Yeah, I just think touching on what you've said, I think absolutely it's challenging, it's different. So I came off the back of 6 months of acute medicine after my initial GP placement, ITP role. And acute medicine, it was just before August 2021, was busy. We had just come off the back of the second wave of COVID. I was on acute medical ward. So straight after acute medicine, they'll go onto this ward, usually often not having a defined COVID positive test or COVID negative test. And that was busy. That was hectic. That was on calls regularly, weekends, nights. But you know, I really loved it. And I think I really love the opportunity to actually, like you said, have defined roles, know when your rota, when you come onto your rota, you know what you need to get done, and then you're off, and then that's it. I think that the biggest challenge I've faced with this role is time management. And I think with anything, it's knowing when you should stop the day, when you should start the day, you know, how do you balance those competing roles that you have, whether that's undergraduate training that you need to prepare for, whether that's postgraduate training that you have in the afternoon, whether it's HEE meetings that you need to schedule yourself in between those roles. And then you need to, on top of that, think about your own personal development, how you're going to take that on. I think the biggest thing I would say in terms of advice about that is making sure you have a calendar, making sure that you have a priority list, and making sure that every day you're working through those priorities and readjusting that on the basis of what the new developments have been for the day or for the week, etc. So I think it's not, I think the best way of dealing with a kind of versatile job like this is to make sure that you're actually re-reviewing things regularly. And I often think, well, actually, this is probably how general practice is in a way, because when you're in a clinic and, you know, you've got a patient that's come in to see you, you've got another few jobs that you need to do in terms of admin, you've got reception calling you up regarding something, you've got the nurse practitioner wanting some advice. Actually, you've got so many competing interests and different things that you need to be able to prioritize and identify what's actually most important, what can wait. And actually, what do you need to kind of say, well, actually, I can leave that till tomorrow. So I think in terms of preparation for that independent role as a general practitioner, I think it's been invaluable. And actually, while it's slightly different in terms of not being clinical, actually, that ability to balance your time and time management has been a really beneficial skill that I've developed.
It's clear that you've taken a lot from the time you've taken out and done really well to make sure that you have that experience. Tell me what's in the future for you? Looking forward to getting back into full-time training? Are you planning to take a slightly different approach?
Yeah, so I definitely looking forward to getting back into full-time training. I think one of the beauties about an OP, I'm not too sure about you, Haytham, is that actually when you take that step back, you really appreciate clinical practice and you kind of remember all the good things about it, and you take in all the good stuff you've done in that year out, but also reevaluate your love for clinical practice and clinical medicine, which I think is a really nice thing. You know, often as doctors we feel overwhelmed, under pressure, understaffed, you know, and actually I think one of the most useful things you can do is take a step back and say, actually, what are my skills, how are they transferable to other areas of of medicine or other areas of healthcare, and how can I bring that back into a positive environment? I think in terms of the future, well, the future looks bright. I can't tell you that I've got this incredible plan in place, but I do know that I want to incorporate my sort of teaching skills within to my practice as a GP. I definitely want to get through training and be able to be that independent practitioner, which we've talked about, but also want to consider bringing in those leadership and management skills I've had during this year into my role as a GP. But let's see where it takes me.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Before we leave our lovely listeners, are there any final tips that you'd want to give them if they want to follow a similar pathway, or more importantly, think about taking time out of training?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I would say is make sure that you have those discussions. Everybody in a way has an interest, particularly in general practice. We're very fortunate because we're kind of trainees that have all these variety of different skills and interests, and being a generalist in general practice is an amazing thing. So have those discussions early, even if that's with your colleagues, that's with your friends, that's with your TPDs, education supervisors, clinical supervisors, about where you see yourself in 5 to 10 years and what you're interested in. Once you've had those discussions, make sure that you actually do that research and find out what's out there, because there is so much out there and we really do need you. Health Education England needs these budding general practitioners who really want to change the face of healthcare and improve things. And Hatham was talking about how, you know, AI is going to be the next big thing. We really need you guys there. And I think the last thing is keep that passion going. You know, sometimes taking that step back can actually be a way of maintaining that longevity in terms of that interest in clinical practice. We need GPs to be GPs first and foremost, but we also need them to be actually people who are willing to be part of the legacy of what the NHS is going to be for the long term. And so I think one of the best things you can do is making sure that you've got other interests along with your general practice to support you in being part of that future of the NHS.
And to support you to be a better clinician, I think is really important to add. I feel like we're kindred spirits. I've loved this chat. It's been wonderful to speak to you. And thank you so much for spending this time this morning with me. And I'm sure our lovely listeners will gain a lot from this conversation.
Thank you, Hatham. And sorry about the little one making all that noise.
Never apologise for that. That's exactly what you want to hear on a podcast. The kids or the cat or the pets, you know, as we've had in previous podcasts, running around making lots of noise.
Yeah, brilliant. No, thanks, Hatham. Thanks for your time, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to come here and talk to our listeners.
Okay, so I really enjoyed that episode, but I feel like everyone on the podcast has heard my voice endlessly on the last episode with Julie and Harry. So actually, I'm going to shoot across quickly to LJ, who I know is very well prepared for this episode. LJ, what do you think?
So my initial response to this was, oh my God, I love this. I love their conversation. I love how they get on. And I particularly relate to Mohammed's experience. So I haven't gone for an out-of-programme experience, but I have just gone less than full-time to do an education role. And I just found it really interesting how similar the process was and the couple of differences that were there as well. So I loved the whole thing. I thought it was a really good episode.
And Kim, I know you have had a varied journey through medicine since graduating, so, and had lots of experiences along the way. I guess what Mohammed's talking about and Hatham about were the value of added experiences on top of that clinical journey that you also have. I mean, what would you say, Kim, in terms of your journey? I know it personally. We are, just disclaimer to the listeners, Kim and I are sat in her back garden currently recording this after we've been out for a session, not of drinking, of learning. I should be
Sounds
clear.
Sounds far more exciting than what it was. Yeah.
But yes, over to you, Kim. What do you think about, you know, all other experiences aside from the clinical journey?
Yeah, so for me, I just don't think I could have gone straight through clinical training. I couldn't have survived it. I seem to get to a period of about 2 or 3 years maximum, and then I need a break. So I've actually never had to take an out of program year, because I've always just been at the end of a program. I've just taken sort of a natural 1 or 2 year gap. But for me, kind of doing everything else just makes the clinical stuff better. So just having those other experiences just makes it makes me get a lot more out of the job, out of the career, and just keeps it all a bit exciting and a bit interesting. I think kind of the relentless aspect of training can be really difficult with portfolio and with the constant exams, and you feel like you're on this ladder that you just can't get out of. Or I've always described it as being trapped in a lift that you can't get out of. But you can get out, and it's easier to get out than I think sometimes what you might think. And sometimes if you're feeling a bit burnt out or feeling a bit kind of like, oh, I'm not really enjoying myself as much as I used to, then just getting off the ladder, taking a bit of time out, doing something a bit different can really sort of invigorate you and just really kind of renew your passion for medicine. Because there's a whole load of things that you can do within the world of medicine. There's lots of different, you know, being a doctor and a medical degree is a gift, really, to do all sorts of different things, and there's so many options. So yeah, I definitely urge people to kind of explore those options and just give things a go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also really interesting you say that there's so many different options, because we heard from Mohammed talking about his experience specifically with, you know, Health Education England sorting out regional training days. That's, you know, on a scale seems such a big thing to be part of and a big team to be part of. And education is such a big thing. It's LJ's little hobby horse, so we'll definitely come to that. But equally, as you said, Kim, so many other opportunities. So education is certainly one of them. Hatim mentioned, you know, he was a clinical director fellow working for NHS Digital. Lots of people do things in leadership. You've done Darzi, Kim.
Yeah.
I actually haven't taken any time out of training, but what I did is, well, that's a lie. I haven't taken any time out of training formally, but after I finished core medical training, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I thought, oh, do you know, I really want to explore a bit more of palliative care and palliative medicine. I really want to figure that out. So I took my time out and did a bit of that, did some work, published some work, looking into, you know, end of life care, specifically to do with, you know, people in the community. And that's sort of what led me to my journey to want to apply for GP. So essentially, I guess what I'm saying is lots of people think that if you want to have time out or experience somewhere, you've really got to be, you know, super hyper focused and know all the contacts and know exactly where to go and be aware of all the processes. Now, of course, that is super helpful, but it doesn't apply to every trainee, and what might be an experience for you could be something entirely different for somebody else. And I guess, LJ, I'm going to come to you, because as you said, you have recently, you know, coming down to less than full time to get another role in education. Tell us a bit about that. Did you have to be really process driven and super focused from that perspective, or go on, tell us a bit about it.
So I guess the start of this sort of story of mine going less than full time actually started with another part of the podcast, in that I actually failed to get the National Clinical Directors Fellowship as well. And I remember feeling pretty cut up and a bit devastated about that. I was wondering, oh gosh, like, I worked really hard on all these things. I thought I was really in for a chance. And I remember sort of being quite down about it for about a week, and then thought, no, actually, like, that's not the only option here. It's a brilliant opportunity, and I'm sure I'll go for it again one day, but actually, like, there are loads of things I can do. And funnily enough, from when I was applying for clinical teaching fellow jobs as an F3, I've never taken off my track jobs email alerts for teaching fellow jobs. And it just so happened that a couple of weeks later, I got one through to be a senior teaching fellow at a hospital in London, a hospital I'd actually trained at as a medical student. So I thought, oh, I wonder if they take part-time people, because it was advertised as a full-time post. And they emailed back saying, yeah, if you were right for the job, we'll definitely give it a go. So a few months later, I'd interviewed and I'd got the job, and now I'm sort of doing it as a job share, actually, with another GP trainee who's got less than full-time. So that's really great. And actually, that all came from a little hiccup, a little failure, which was really nice to sort of hear his side of it as well, insofar that he'd not got something he really wanted, but then he'd already applied for his year out and thought, oh, I'll best fill it with something. But what he's found has really seemed to suit him anyway, and perhaps arguably better than what he would have got out of the fellowship, maybe, because it suits him better, and he seems to have built local sort of networks around it. And I think that's really important, and he's really built something amazing out of this year that he's had out. And just think of the transferable skills into being a GP. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, completely. And I think it speaks so much for, and we touched about this on the podcast before, is that there's a very specific personality type, even though we can be all so very, very different, is that we all will touch upon failure at some point in our careers in any way, shape or form, whether it was your exams or, you know, portfolio, ARCP, or applying for jobs and not getting them. And I think a lot of people listening may have experienced similar, you know, failures in AIT, also first five, and also along your career. And Kim and I were talking about something quite interesting today about, this is a year we are both, hopefully, fingers crossed, LJ, that we will be CCTing, and what that journey then means for you, because you feel like you're embarking upon something new. And you know, it's a very unique position to be in general practice at the moment, where people are clamoring for you. They really want you to work there, even if it's to get experiences in leadership positions or do other things. They're desperate for us. And I thought, oh, this is really the start of it. But earlier we met a GP who's been working in general practice for 15 years or so, is a PCN director, has done lots of other leadership roles, has worked as a partner, and all of these things. He resigned about 2 months ago, and he's about really excited to start his new journey as a locum and do other things as well. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, yeah, you're so right. Sometimes we see these failures and go, oh, what can we do? But actually, it's to reframe it and think, what else is out there? Because we are really, thankfully, not limited to just this one track. Wouldn't you agree, Kim?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, a GP, I think GP as a career is a gift, isn't it, really, in terms of the options that are available to you. I think we've said that before, but I mean, I can definitely relate to you, LJ, on the failure front. I recently applied for the regional kind of FMLM fellowships and was unsuccessful, and I applied for a King's Fund fellowship last year and was unsuccessful. So, you know, you will apply for lots and lots of things and not get them, and that's okay. That's perfectly normal. I remember somebody saying to me that if you're not getting rejected from jobs, then you're not pushing yourself enough. So it's all about reframing it, isn't it? But there will be something else that comes along. And as you say, it was great that Mohammed sort of kind of took the reins and used his time out to kind of do something else as well. So yeah, there's so many options, so much to do. So, you know, there's almost that you always want to extend training just to kind of have all these options open to you.
Yeah. Hopefully all the PDs who are listening to this are thinking, no, don't do that. That's extra work for us. No, I'm joking. Of course, I'm joking. I think also there is something to be said about, you know, Mohammed spoke about how prepared he was and then how things changed and how he adapted. But also sometimes it is a little bit of luck and a little bit of fortune about being in the right place at the right time. And I think it is trying to find those spaces and navigate those spaces where you are speaking to networks of like-minded individuals, whether that's through your VTS or you recognize I've got a real interest in sports medicine, for instance, or I've got a real interest in health and well-being. And I know my practice, you know, a practice may have a park run and I really want to get involved with that, because then that's where you have this meeting of the minds, as it were, you know, and you're much more likely to then find opportunities that happen sort of by chance. And I think that's a big take home that I've gained from doing this podcast since 2020 now, is that a lot of the people that we speak to who really love the careers that they're in primary care, is that a lot of this stuff has just happened fortuitously. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't maybe something that they had ever planned that they would embark upon, but they've happened to be in this place and they've been able to really create some change or put something in place, and has empowered them to then want to speak about it and share that knowledge. And that's the thing, we aren't gatekeepers of all of this. And I think the episode with Mohammed and Hatem was a really nice way to show how these things can be achieved. And it's that there's no secrets. There's obviously hard work, and that goes without saying for a lot of things, but that it can be achievable if that's what you want.
I think that goes on really nicely actually to something else I wanted to mention about the podcast, and is that his description of how he approached it with his TPDs, and that he sort of shared with them in the end anyway, like what he wanted to gain out of it and like what his goals were in his career. And actually, even if you don't have like a specific role or goal or program experience or whatever, or fellowship or whatever it is, even if you don't have a specific one in mind, your TPDs might know, you know, like they might be able to put you in touch with somebody, your supervisor might be able to, your clinical supervisor, the people in your practice might know somebody who they can put you in touch with. And I think being really open and honest with the people who are training you towards being a GP, this is all one big journey and they're a part of it, is to share that with them and be like, actually, I'm really interested in education, or I'm really interested in palliative care or child health or prison medicine, like we've heard, and all those other things. If you're interested in it and you share it with them, they're going to want to help you And, you know, you never know, you might get something like more tangible out of it rather than just a good chat, you know?
The other thing I would add to, I completely agree with you, LJ, and also, you know, don't be afraid to carve your own career path. Like, I think that is possible. You know, if you've got an interest and there isn't a fellowship for it, then, you know, go and knock on, find somebody who does what you want to do and ask them if you can kind of work with them. Quite a few things that I've done have come off the back of Twitter. So just opportunities that I've seen on Twitter. A lot of people kind of slate social media, but Twitter is actually a really useful platform for networking and finding things that interest you. And I remember, you know, an opportunity to become an action learning set facilitator I saw on Twitter, and, you know, and it's been a fantastic experience. So if there is something that you want, that you think you might be interested in, then go and knock on the doors of people that work in that area, because actually the chances are they'll be absolutely delighted to sort of have you along and have you interested.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with what you both said anymore, and makes us very amicable podcast fellows, doesn't it, really? And I guess the other thing, and the caveat that I will say to all of this, is I think there will be some trainees for whom training is the absolute maximum that they can do at that space in their life at that time. It's about getting through. And that's totally fine, because I think being a GP, as we've said multiple, it isn't a linear thing. And whether you are, you know, have all the intentions in the world, like lots of people have had, and maybe experience a little bit of failure, but then find something really successful whilst you're training, like Mohammed has, and you know, Kim and LJ have, or actually it's that you get through this process, you find out what kind of GP it is you want to be, how that works into your lifestyle and, you know, your family circumstances, social circumstances, and you settle into a community essentially. And then you realize, oh, well, actually maybe I should be doing a bit more of this or a bit more of that. And this is obviously an early careers GP podcast, but we have spoken to so many people who would say that they felt that their early careers actually went on for decades until they actually found specifically their niche and where they wanted to go. So it's that, not to be disheartened if you're an ST1 or ST2 and still have no clue, that's totally fine. But if you do have a clue, I think these guys' tips have been pretty useful. And LJ, I guess, was there anything else from the podcast that you wanted to mention? I've got to say to the listener, LJ has actually been a smarty pants here and has listened to the whole episode, has been so great and proactive in terms of wanting to talk about how great she found the episode speaking to Hatim speaking to Mohammed, because education is a passion of hers, and you can tell that and you can hear that. So you know what, LJ, the floor is yours.
Yeah,
well, thank you, that's very nice of you. I think that assessment of me probably came from a very excitable voice note that I sent the our little somewhere in between WhatsApp group, when I was like, that was so great, I loved it. Yeah, I think that just the reason why I loved it was that it spoke to me so much. I just felt like I really related to the experience of it, the passion that he obviously had about medical education and tying that into his career going forward. And the recognition that actually you don't have to be a GP and an educator in two different roles for it to be useful, like the crossover between being a good clinical teacher and being a good doctor, are just the crossover is insane. I think that in my position anyway, doing lots of education makes me a better doctor, and being a good doctor hopefully makes me a better teacher again, hopefully. So yeah, I think from the podcast, I just really loved his enthusiasm and passion for education, and that just got me really excited. And I guess that the long and short of it is, if you've got something that makes you that excited and that you love so much and you want to build that into your career going forward, and there's even the slightest bit of an opportunity to build that into your career, then go for it. Like I did, and I'm still working on it. I'm still figuring out how less than full-time doctoring goes next to a part-time education role somewhere else in the country, kind of. And it's just a bit strange and a bit tricky. But it's all worth it, I think. And yeah, I think my long and short of it is that I really loved his passion. And I think that if you've got that, definitely go for it.
I mean, I wish that the listeners could see what me and Kim are seeing, which is LJ with a big beaming smile on her face when she talks about something.
Happy.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's it, isn't it? It's the having that passion for something.
And it's okay. I think just to reinforce the point, it's okay for your passion to be not medicine. So it's okay to do GP and to say, I just want to do 3 days a week. That's enough for me. And actually my interests lie in my family or outside of medicine. And I am absolutely happy with just doing my GP days. That is a job in itself, and that is enough.
I was actually saying this to my clinical supervisor. Like I said, I'm struggling a little bit with the balance between the two, this new situation I find myself in. And I thought, I love being a doctor so much, and I actually really miss being here as much as I was. And I'm finding it hard squishing all of that experience into half a week. And I think if I didn't love being a doctor so much, it wouldn't work, you know? Being a GP trainee is really great. Having two jobs is tricky, but both of them are great. So,
I mean, I think an exemplar for any aspiring AIT out there, LJ, definitely. And I think the we could wax lyrical about this episode, because I think that there are so many opportunities that we have seen our colleagues have, that we have had ourselves, that we would want to advocate for others, but also, again, reiterating the fact that it's not about gatekeeping. We, you know, about sharing those things within your VTSs, within your networks, speaking to your TPDs, maybe speaking to people who have CCT'd and have, you know, come back. Or, you know, if you're interested, get in touch with us. We all have our Twitter accounts that will be attached. Bryn can do that with some fancy thing. And I guess leading us quite nicely, sort of a nice segue, if you will, is talking about things that people are really passionate about, and a sneak peek for the for maybe a future episode. LJ, you had an interesting chat earlier today, didn't you? With someone who's got a lot of passion. Well, people who've got a significant passion in something.
So not to spoil anything, but about an hour ago, maybe just over an hour ago, I'd finished speaking to a couple of really, really passionate people. So I had a GP and a GP trainee about greener practice and climate change and how it relates to general practice. So yeah, it was really, really fun. And I come away smiling and beaming like you see me now. Maybe that's why I'm happy. I don't know.
I mean, we all want a better Earth, don't we, really?
We really do. Save the planet.
Exactly. And so I think with those very wise words and a sneak peek into what our future episode may be touching upon, I hope you have all really thoroughly enjoyed listening to what I very, very biasedly think is a fantastic episode of Somewhere in Between, and hope you guys will join us next time to listen to an episode all about greener practice. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
I'll be perfectly honest, I never listen back to anything I bookend because I just can't fix it.
I do like my own voice. I was told never to go on the radio, so here we are.